Hi, I'm Debbie Lewis. I am the Regional Ecosystem Manager at NatWest in the Enterprise, covering the East Midlands and East of England. But I also run a business for 17 years before starting as a business coach. I grew my team from 3 to 47 employees across multi-sites before scaling and exiting and starting this new journey of helping other entrepreneurs by leaving the ladder down.
I'm Jazz Ampafar. I'm international keynote speaker, author, broadcaster, and I am a proud resident of Milton Keynes, running Be Human First with my business partner and husband, Ed.
I'm Nikki Perfect. I am an international hostage and crisis negotiator turned speaker and trainer. I also run three of my own businesses on one site, and just really pleased to be here and sharing the information and the lessons that I've learned over the years.
Hi, I'm Julie Mills. I'm the chair of Women Leaders UK. For 35 years, had a fantastic career in education, ultimately becoming the chief exec of the Milton Keynes College Group. And alongside that, I've always kept my foot in the business world, co-owning a family engineering business for the last 35 years too.
Okay, well, welcome to the third in our series of podcasts entitled Inspirational MK. I'm delighted that I'm joined by three such outstanding guests today as we just have a conversation around enterprise and entrepreneurship. I'd like to kick off, if I can, by just asking each of you to kind of do a mini introduction to each other.
So my name's Nikki. I was a police officer for 31 years in London in the Metropolitan Police. The last decade of that, I was an international hostage and crisis negotiator, became the director of training, worked on a unit of just six people in New Scotland Yard who had it as their full-time job, which was an amazing experience. I retired in January 2018, and when I left I was like, well, who am I now? I'd retrained as a personal trainer because I love fitness and health. I've got a performance coaching qualification, and I had this hostage and crisis stuff here, which I knew was brilliant and amazing, but I didn't know how it worked in the outside world. I spoke to my partner. I said, garage is for sale, buy it. What? Buy it, what are we gonna do with it? We'll convert the car showroom into a coffee shop and a gym, and that's what we did. We now run the gym is now a community hub, the garage is still a full-time garage, and the coffee shop is a social enterprise. Really huge lessons I learned from being a hostage and crisis negotiator are that we all have a story, we all have a crisis at some stage, and loneliness is one of the biggest killers in the UK. And actually creating that hub helped me to keep living into my purpose, which was to make a difference in the world and bring people together.
Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.
Jazz, how about you?
I was a teacher, so I started off in teaching. Love education. Reading, writing and spelling were my tickets out of mindset poverty, never mind physical poverty. I grew up in and out of foster care on the streets, so education's played a massive role in being a stable kind of family atmosphere. I got into literacy because that was so important to me, and I kind of feel like kids should leave primary school being able to read, write and spell. A lot of them read with the ability to mummify a dead Egyptian should the need ever arise, but still missing some crucial skills. So I was very passionate about that. And I was doing a programme, and I went to the back of the book and phoned the publisher and said, you should give me some free resources. I'm telling everyone how good your programme is. And he said, oh, okay, come along. So I went to his office and just took myself over to Chigwell. And he kind of connected with me and said, would you come and do some speaking at this event we're at? So I went along to the event. He was very stats and data, and here's all that, don't bother. And I was like, this is what Gary Bates in my class does. And I showed kids work, and he realised that I was quite good at promoting his programme. So I went all over the world doing that, worked with international governments, brought the governments up the Pearl Scale, made a big difference across the world in literacy and advising. But I kind of felt I was never really telling the truth because I was hiding my story for fear of what people would say if they knew about my terrible X Factor backstory. I'm the only woman doing what, I'm the only brown person doing. I had massive imposter syndrome. So I was hideously afraid of anyone finding out who I was. And then I was doing talks, and it got bigger and bigger, and I'm speaking at big events, and I'm going all around the world, and I'm like, oh. And then one day I thought, well, what would happen if I just told the truth? I was at an education event with some teachers, and I thought, I'm just going to tell you that your work changes lives, and what you do makes a difference. And it resulted in me trending on Twitter. And then I got a TEDx talk, and then I got a book deal, and then I'm being asked to speak on resilience and mindset and being human first and being a positive disruptor and all this stuff. So I lent into that. And then I've won Speaker of the Year 3 times. I've won awards, and the business has gotten huge, and it's fantastic. And I'm now owning that story. But it's the same as you. My kind of feeling was, it's, you know, let's leave the planet, the world, Milton Keynes, better than we found it. Not as we'd expect to find it, but better than. What does that look like? So my core message turned into this, be 10% braver. What would it look like if your life was just, if you were just 10% braver, what would life look like? So now I run Be Human First with my husband, Ed, and we do speaking, coaching, training and workshops around predictive behaviour, which is quite close to the hostage negotiation, the psychology background we have. And also looking at how to be human first as a leader.
Amazing. Thank you. Thank you so much. Debbie, how about you? What's your journey been?
Well, do you know, I reflect back on how I ever ended up in business because much like many people in my generation, my parents were not in business. I think I watched a little bit too much Margaret Thatcher and Madonna on the telly and thought that I could change the world. So little me went off to university. During that time, I had to work four jobs a day to pay my way through uni. And I picked up a lot of skills in that time. And I also worked for a lot of people. And they were all small business owners. And I think that was where I first really got the bug for you could do this. Anyone could own their own small business. So early in my 20s, having left university and taught, so trod that same path, I'd joined a college teaching, and I just really didn't enjoy the paperwork and the red tape. Yeah. But what I loved was helping other people. And actually what I thought, and this is a genuine process of opening a business, is I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. Quite fancy opening a salon. That was as much rationale as I had. And because I'd always worked in salons from being kind of 13, 14 years old making tea, I went out and I plodded the pavements and I found a very supportive bank, who I will not name, who said, I don't know how we're going to do this, but I really want to help you. And thanks to that particular bank manager, I was able to get the funding, because I was a university graduate, to get the money I needed to buy my first business. And I walked in there on day one, 25 years younger than anyone else who worked there, with a key and a fiver. That was all I had, but a massive belief that I could do this. Fast forward a number of years, I grew to 47 staff, turning over just under £1 million a year, and my life looked and felt very different. Externally, it looked like I was absolutely smashing it. But internally, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't want to tell anyone I didn't know what I was doing. And I really struggled. I found it really hard. And actually now, having scaled, exited, left, become part of a network that supports businesses, I now know I had to go through those chapters to be able to live this next part of my journey. But also helping other people to never have to go through what I went through, because God, it was hard.
Yeah, yeah.
God, it was hard. But also it was beautiful.
Thank you. What an amazing panel. And already I think we're just uncovering kind of similarities alongside those big differences. As an entrepreneur, how does culture and value work? What does it mean to you? Perhaps if we start, Jazz, with you.
Yeah, it's the central part of everything, because the whole point is you're building something that fits around your three core values, around who you are, and enabling you to, I want to be like the best me I can, and it's that ikigai thing, and give the world what it wants and generate an income that means I don't, you know, end up in a situation where I can't live. Building something for yourself which fits in alignment with who you are was brilliant. But I think the problem is that often it's certainly in my place, and it might have been the same with you as well, but being who you are is actually quite hard because you feel like you've got to be this version of yourself which looks perfect, which I gave up on a long time ago. And the skills I found of being homeless, being on the streets, having to fend for myself, setting up, I had businesses from when I was like 8 years old because otherwise we didn't eat. So, but those skills are exactly the same skills I use in entrepreneurship, exactly the same. My biggest value is integrity. I am, because I'd rather be open, I'd rather fail being honest and doing it my way than succeed having to turn the volume down on anything and not be myself. So, and that means that it, in a way, it makes it so easy, because everyone we hire, everyone we work with, everything we do is all about being personally authentic and professionally vulnerable and being open and honest. It's about connection. It's about meeting people where they are. And so our business is literally called Be Human First, Professional Second. And we literally built a business around who we are and the change we want to see in the world. So I'm very clear on who I am, and that attracts people who enjoy that way of being. So I think it's critical, mm. but I think you've got to get clear about who you are, do the work on values before you start your marketing. Mm, otherwise yeah. you're attracting mm. you know, yeah. anybody really.
I think values are often not discussed in the business mm. world. I think it more so, they're increasingly so. And I completely agree, it's the core of fulfillment and happiness and knowing your purpose. And Nikki, can you expand a bit more on your, I mean, you mentioned them in your introduction. What do culture and values mean in your business?
Yeah, a huge amount. And it's really interesting because I know when I'm not aligned to my values, I describe it in the book like a jigsaw that doesn't fit, mm. for example. I kind of lost the value a little bit about why did I originally start this? What was this all about? And I got a bit sidetracked by other things. And I was like, oh, I'm not really enjoying this. Mm. And I sat down and I went, well, what's stopping me from enjoying this? And I realised that my values had become misaligned with the whole purpose of why we set the business up. And now we're back on track and I'm like, this is so much better. This is working. I feel so much better. This is perfect.
Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.
So what does success
look
like for you?
You know what? This is a good question. In one of my keynotes, I ask people, I have a little bit where I say, you know, just, in fact, we'll do it now, around the table. Don't overthink it, just tell the truth. Put your hand up if you believe you're a success. You see, and this is exactly what happens. We get a woman who, oh my gosh, oh my God, we get a woman who's clearly a success going, oh, I don't know, Maureen. Half up, either you are a success or you are not. You're going kind of. And then we get people going, go on, you put your hand up. My whole thing is about stories. It's about your story and upgrading your story to match your expertise. So this happens. When I'm in America, if I ask for... people are on the table with their knickers in the air. Yes, ma'am! You know, but in England, it's like, oh, I don't know. And in different parts of the world, it differs. So I eventually ask people. It's never a very high percentage. I think the most I've got is maybe about 3%. And one time there was 7,000 and there was this wave stood up and then people kept like a Mexican wave. Yeah. But that was peer pressure. But and then I say to people, so, you know, here's the deal. I don't know what success looks like to you, but what I know is that when someone asks you that question, you know for sure. And others are like, people also, well, define success. It's not my story, it's your story. You define success. And so it's this and then also the thing, if you say, oh no, I'm not, then I'm like, okay, so if I came to your family, to your business, and I asked the same question, and the same thing happened, like no one said anything, and someone said, oh, I don't know, maybe, would you be happy with that? No, of course, but we set the tone. Mm. So for me, I'm a huge success. Are you kidding me? I have a fridge full of food. I have a husband that adores me. I have kids that aren't criminals and they're pretty good humans. I run this amazing business. I get to travel all over the world speaking to people. I am an abuse victim who grew up in foster care and on the streets. And I am a whole person who is on the other side of healing. There is nothing about me that is not successful. But sometimes when we ask that question, people take a look inside and they find all the things that haven't gone right or they haven't done. And I've got a spectacular failure CV. I'm even a success in the failure stakes because I've made so many mistakes. I've got so much experience of pivoting and turning around that I have very little fear around what if. And that used to be my whole driver for stuff. So there are so many ways that I can measure success. The struggle, I think, is to live on the truth about who you are.
Nikki, success for you, what does that look like?
Well, I am a success.
Yes, you are. Own it.
Yeah, I will. I love that. That's, you know, that is so powerful, and you're so right, I think, in general, because certainly sometimes I've changed my view on this, because I used to go, well, I haven't got, like, loads of money. I have, you know, my businesses sometimes like, are on the line. Sometimes I struggle a little bit to pay people's wages. Therefore, I can't be successful. And somebody said to me, what did you create the coffee shop for? And I said, to bring people together. So that they have a safe space where they can come at any time, have a coffee, conversation, and they'll be safe and looked after and loved. And she said, have you created that? And I went, yeah, we have. And she went, are you a success? And I went, yeah, it is a success. Yeah. So yeah, it's really interesting. And yet, even then when you asked me, I was like, well, I'm a kind of success. Yeah. But actually, if I sat down and listed everything, and just go on, well, what have you achieved in your life? What have you achieved actually since you left policing? What do you achieve in policing? And I'd be like, well, yeah.
Well, do you think it's comparisonitis? Like you're comparing yourself to someone else the whole time? Is that why we can't say, Like, I'm not Beyonce, so I'm not a success. Is that the story we are?
I don't think it is for me comparing me to someone else. I think it's comparing me to where I would like to be.
Ah, right, okay.
So for me, when you ask the question, do you feel like you're successful? I actually feel like I've been successful. I am occasionally visibly successful. I'm very often satisfied with my success. But am I a success? It felt really definitive. And so it's so funny, isn't it? I actually teach on I Am Remarkable, which is about self-celebration.
Yeah, yeah. Program. Yeah.
So I should have been the first one shooting my hand straight up. Yeah. And yet the minute we think about it in a personal context, we're like, ooh, there's a lot of parameters. Yeah. Yeah. What am I measuring it against? So,
And I suspect a bit of a cultural fixation with external measures now. I am surrounded by multi-award winning business people here. So all of that external validation you've all had in shed loads, but as Jazz has articulated, it's still really difficult for people to just say, yes, I am a success, I am successful. And I do think our shared experience would be that it can be more difficult for women than it is for than it is for men. So yeah, fascinating subject, and you know, I hope that people really hear your message, Jazz, and take that forward. In an enterprise where actually it is about you, you are the founder, the owner. How is teamwork important? How do you build it in? Nikki, what do you think?
Yeah, teamwork for me is super important. I've always worked as part of a team, anyway, in my background before, because you don't know everything. And other people have just ideas that you'd never, you know, we like people who are like us, don't we? But actually, we know that when we work with people who are not like us, it's much better.
Yeah.
One of the joys I've had, and I wasn't expecting this, from opening the businesses, is seeing young people come through. So they come along, they come and like work on Saturday or Sunday, they're nervous about talking to customers, they're a bit nervous about making coffee, they're nervous about doing the till. By the time they leave, having spent 2 or 3 years and go to university, they're confident, you see the difference. They've had opportunity, they've been involved in the business, so they're like, well, what do you think? Well, actually, you're asking my opinion, that's amazing. So, and it's so lovely to see people grow and get more confident and be part of something. I always think being part of something bigger than yourself is an amazing thing anyway.
Sure is.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I love that, the growing future leaders as you go on. That's, I know companies sometimes go, but if we empower them, what if they leave? Well, good. That's, you know, they'll come back because other places might not empower them. Teamwork for me is one of the biggest things that we look at, because it's this idea of, well, we work with a lot of leaders, and one of the chief things that leaders will often say is, well, my team aren't listening to me. I've told them what to do and they're not doing it. I'm like, well, either they're lying awake at night thinking of ways to annoy you, possible but unlikely, or you haven't communicated it in a way that connects with their values and realizes the part they play, and given them a story that is powerful. And that's great, because we can do something about that. So for us, it's about getting the voices at the table, making sure we know we have this blind spot. Like, we hire a lot of people who are the polar opposite to us. So I'm a connector, I'm great at bringing people and ideas. But give me a spreadsheet if you want to kill me. I mean, I can do it, but it requires so much energy, isn't it? And you're just like, why? I'm losing the will to breathe. So we hire people who are guardian-like in their skills. Like, I don't even handle my own diary, because my ADHD makes it really hard for me to stay on track. So I hire people who are brilliant at that skill, because they love doing it, and it enhances me. And it just makes me feel really grateful as well, that I don't have to be good at everything.
I know that it would be really amazing for our listeners and viewers if they could hear from you. It's going to be a tough question, but your one top tip, the one thing that you would say to someone at whatever stage of their life or journey, your golden nugget, what's your one thing? So Debbie, I'm going to start with
you. And our listeners may have heard me say this before, but I think it's important enough that I repeat it. I truly, truly believe that we are just three things away from anything that we want in life. The first is, you've got to want it enough. You've got to want it more than anything else. Secondly, you've got to be prepared to work harder than anybody else that you know to get there. And thirdly is the network, the people you surround yourself with. I truly believe those three things can change your life.
Thank you so much.
Work on
them. I love that. I want to write that down.
Yeah, that's great, isn't it? You'll be able to watch the podcast.
I will, yeah. I'll take notes.
I'm not sure I can follow that, to be honest. So I think my key takeaway really is be you. Everybody else is taken. So don't worry about trying to be anybody else. Just be you and have that belief, that self-belief,
mm-hmm.
that all things are achievable. Like you say, you just have to, yeah, it's hard work, but all things are achievable.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think mine is a combination of those two. It's be 10% braver.
Mm.
It really, because it opens so many doors. And yes, sometimes it means you're aiming for epic failure, but that the quickest way to learn.
Yeah.
And a success is someone who's just failed a load of times and got up again, as we know. So why are we avoiding success? And I think it's the 10% braver thing is kind of, for me, it comes from this story of what's happened before. Your past is not a script for what happens next.
Mm.
And if you're in a mindset of bravery, your past isn't your future, and you can change it. So I would encourage people, especially from your point, that you're not alone. You are not unique. You're not original. You're not the other people are feeling the same thing. They're going through the same struggles. They have the same questions and doubts. Reach out to them. Build your network. Connect. Be honest and build something beautiful.
I'm so inspired by everything you've talked about this morning. I think there are so many things that have resonated for me. I think for me, it's absolutely about making those connections, finding those people, not being on your own. You know, the value of mentoring, coaching, networking, and they don't have to be formal things. They can just be about the relationships you form, as you described. That would be my golden nuggets. It's been a wonderful conversation. I know our listeners and viewers will absolutely love it. Please do stalk our panelists on their social media, LinkedIn, Twitter, etc. Connect with them, engage with them, and take the conversation forward. So thank you all very much indeed.
Pleasure. Great fun.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.